Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, Alex, one half of Rabonas and Rhythms here. Thanks so much for downloading the show. I'm delighted to say we picked up a lot of new listeners over the summer during our World Cup specials, so I just thought I'd explain the format of the podcast. So we try and bring you fascinating football stories from around the world, concentrating on a country at a time, or speaking to a musician about their love of football, or a footballer about their love of music, anywhere that the two meet, and sometimes where they don't, and we just love the music, or we love the footballer themselves. We love suggestions from you, so do follow us on Instagram and Facebook and Twitter and tweet us suggestions. We absolutely love that. But we're going to do something a little bit different today. A little while ago, Luke Moore from the Football Ramble, which is an incredible podcast, and Luke does lots of great other projects as well that we touch on during this interview. He said it'd be great to just chat about ordinary people's music choices on a podcast. Now, I made that podcast, Desert Isolation Discs. We got some great guests on, including Everett True, the music critic, who talked about his experiences firsthand with Courtney Love and Kurt Cobain. We interviewed Nick Helm, the comedian, who's famous for the BBC Two show Uncle, and is also a musician. So do go and check that out. But we thought we'd bring that together with the Rabonas and Rhythms show while we're making our next series. So we brought Luke on for that, I'm delighted to say. On the next series, my co-presenter James is out in Senegal right now, actually putting together some great material for the next series, and we've got other interesting stories that we can't wait to bring you later in the year. So I'll stop rambling now, ironically enough, and bring you Luke. But before I do, here's a word from someone who Pompey fan Luke might not quite love.
Hi, I'm Matt Letitia, and you're listening to Rabonas and Rhythms.
Hello and welcome to Rabonas and Rhythms, the show about music and football. We've got a very special guest for you today. It's Luke Moore from the Football Ramble. Just as a little prelude to this podcast, Luke and I met back at a comedy gig from his fellow Ramble co-presenter Jim Campbell back in 2014. He gave me the nucleus of an idea to basically rip off Desert Island Discs from Radio 4, but with more interesting people. At that time, I vowed over the pint to get Luke into the studio and find out his musical choices. Luke, how do you feel now that I've held you to it?
It was actually 2012, so you've misremembered the date, but that's okay. And I don't know if I am as interesting, probably not, but yeah, I'm happy to be here.
No, it's great. So we're going to do a Rabonas special and meld the two podcasts, as it were, this week. So Luke, we know you from the Football Ramble, we know about your love of football, and we'll come on to that, but tell us a bit about your love of music, because we do occasionally hear from you singing on the podcast.
Yeah, and I think people get get the wrong end of the stick about that. I think they think that I'm just singing because I think I'm a really good singer. And what it is that's just what I'm like. I'm always singing around, and I try and be myself in the studio. So occasionally that type of thing will bleed its way into a show.
Yeah.
But I love music. Yeah, and part of the reason I said I'll come and do it is because you're mm-hmm. you're a friend, but also because I like talking about music, and I'm happy to do it at any opportunity. So here I am. But it's been a big part of my life, as I'm sure it has for many people. Ever since I can remember, really. I come from a musically interested family. I grew up listening to records my parents liked, and sort of went from there. And it's always been a huge part of my life. I spent a bit of time working in music, although not that long.
We want to hear about that. Come on.
Well, I did a bit of tour managing and a bit of artist management and a bit of club night promoting, and then I worked a bit for a label or two, but not very long. Not for very long, and I decided that partly because I didn't get paid much money for doing it, but also because I just decided that music is a hobby for me and something that I'm a fan of, rather than necessarily needing to get in there and see how the sausage is made, so to speak. So I left fairly swiftly and haven't gone back since. But nevertheless, music still is a big part of my life.
So, what's your opening track today?
The opening track I've chosen is a song by a band called Secret Machines. who I remember when I first heard this record back in, would have been, what, 2004, early 2004, not long before I moved to London. And I read about it in a newspaper or something, and I played it for the first time, bought it and played it on CD for the first time in my car, and just remember thinking, wow, this is like music from another planet. It sounds so big. They would call it new prog. I think it's more like a space rock type sound. But yeah, and this is for me the best song on the record. It's Sad and Lonely.
Bit of space rock for you then. Let's have a listen.
Did you get your heartache and your head rush confused? Had you been sleeping late?
What's the podcast about?
The Football Ramble is a twice weekly show about football, as the name suggests. But it's more of an entertainment show about football than a football show, I would say. And we spend Monday and Thursday either looking back over the weekend or looking forward to the next weekend. All the big talking points, all the sort of fun of the fair, really, and trying to really... dig into the funnier, more light-hearted, irreverent side of the game, because a lot of other shows out there and a lot of other coverage of football is quite serious, and we try to not be that. But at the same time, I like to think it has still got a bit of weight about it as well.
Absolutely, absolutely. And as someone who's listened to it for the best part of a decade, I would add to that that I think some of the in-jokes that you develop, not just with yourselves, but with the people who listen to it, are one of the attractions that really keep people listening to The Ramble. I mean, it's spawned books and live shows. We're sitting behind branded mics. We've even got cushions with Pete Donaldson's face on them, which, I mean, there can be no higher pinnacle, surely.
That was a joke by me that went too far. That's a joke by me that went £75 too far to get his face put on every cushion in the studio.
Including postage and packaging?
I think it might have been, yeah. Oof. And I even ordered two of the same one by accident. I was trying to do it really quickly, so they came for the time the studio was open, which I managed to succeed in doing. But yeah, so everywhere you go, you sit on a cushion with Pete's face on it, which he secretly absolutely loves, although he pretends that it's a bit embarrassing.
But you could never have imagined what it would become when you set out, presumably.
When we set out, no, I wouldn't have thought so. I think when we set out, we just wanted to chat football as a group of friends and have an excuse to do so. But as things progressed, then I suppose, you know, it's not like one day you're doing it at home with your pals and the next day you've got your own studio, and branded mics and a live show. It takes time,
of course,
and it goes in stages. And it's the same with anything. It's like, you know, your own career. You don't go from being a work experience to the CEO in a day. You work through it. It's been very much a process.
Yeah.
So I think we've had time over the years to get used to each next step. So it doesn't feel quite so odd as perhaps some people might think it would. So it's it is what it is, and we enjoy doing it.
No, it's fantastic. So can you give us your next track?
Yes, my next track is... so I'm a big fan of pop music as well, and pop music for its own sake. I don't think pop music is anything to be scared of or to be derided or to be worried about not looking cool enough to listen to it. I think if you like it, you should just like it. And when I was growing up listening to records with my parents and listening to cassette tapes in my mum's car, we listened to a lot of stuff like Madonna and other bits and pieces of classic sort of 80s and 90s pop. And I think this song I've chosen here now is probably the best pop, straight pop song of the 21st century, in my opinion, by, again, in my opinion, the finest pop artist working in the world today. And it's Call Me Maybe by Carly Rae Jepsen.
You took
Carly Rae there. Luke, what is it about that song that you particularly love?
I think it's just perfectly catchy, perfectly simple. doesn't take itself too seriously. The video is fun as well. So I think there's this perfect sort of sweet spot in pop music where you don't take yourself too seriously, but the lyrics reflect that. You don't get into too sort of deep, heavy, meaningful stuff. For example, I like quite a lot of different boy band songs, but I don't really like it when they slow it down and sit on the stools and start doing the really earnest stuff. I just like the upbeat stuff, keep it upbeat. And I think as long as it does that, it's got a good chance of being successful. And there's nothing about that song you could add to or take away that would make it any better. It's just a perfect pop song, 3 minutes almost, just over 3 minutes, perfect length. Just ridiculously catchy. I've listened to it so many times, I've never once got bored of it.
And so you're a man who likes to study formations. Is there a boy band that you think you could have slotted into?
Now you're talking.
Someone who could be subbed out in favour of the Moor?
My simple answer to that is I reckon I could have slotted into any of them, but everyone else probably says none of them. That would be
versatile.
My answer.
Versatile. The James Milner of pop bands.
But not in anyone else's opinion.
Yeah. As long as you can don a white suit and you know, stand up from that stool when required.
That's very 90s, early 2000s, though, isn't it? It's all about the tattoos now and the hoodies and stuff.
Very good point. I'd say, pitch yourself as a modern
yeah, concept. But then I am almost 38, so it's probably not going to work. It's a bit more tragic than ever.
So away from the pop, what would you sort of see as your, like, the core genres that you loved growing up? You know, everyone gets pigeonholed in this country, but was there one that you found yourself taking?
I think it was the usual thing, really. As a kid growing up in a small town, I think I got into metal quite early. I really used to love Metallica and Guns N' Roses, which I suppose is like a really safe version of metal or classic rock, I suppose, in Guns N' Roses' case. So I really liked that. Because it felt dangerous, it felt a little bit naughty, as pathetic as that sounds now, but that's what you like when you're a kid, and so I liked that. I also liked, it's not weird, because my parents would have exposed me to it. I quite liked stuff like David Bowie. I was really into David Bowie as a young kid. But then I also quite liked, like, pop hip-hop, like Vanilla Ice and Criss Cross. And that kind of stuff. So it's a bit of a mix, really, a bit of an amalgamation. But I was really into music from quite a young age. I remember spending quite a lot of my pocket money, and then when I hit sort of 16, Saturday job money on records, on CDs it would have been.
And where did you get them?
There was an Our Price in Gospel High Street, which is not there anymore. And there was also a shop called Reflex Records, which is like an independent record store where you could get stuff like, when I moved and I got a bit older, I started to like stuff like Nirvana and then Pearl Jam, and then even sort of the more sort of Nirvana light stuff like Silverchair. I liked all that kind of stuff as well. And so you could go to Reflex Records and they would stock that type of stuff.
Yeah.
Because of course there was no internet or anything then. So that was how it sort of went. And back in those days, you could really sort of, I feel like you could identify what type of music someone liked by how they dressed. And so me and my friends were all really into like grunge type stuff around that sort
you
of
had
time.
You had the hoodies?
Hoodie and the big baggy trousers. Oh, yeah. And I used to borrow my dad's short sleeve shirts and wear those as well, yeah.
Naturally. Well, that would have made you cooler, whatever.
I think it was many things I was, Alex, but cool was certainly not one.
And so what's your next song?
My next song, I'm taking it all the way back to the start. Now, I did sort of ruminate over this list for quite a long time. It's really hard to get just 8 songs, and I wanted to be as sort of representative of the music I like as possible. But of course, it's really difficult because there's so many different types of music I like, and I listen to music every day, as I'm sure you do. So what I thought I'd do, I really, about 10 years ago, I started to really get into like early blues music, sort of Delta blues, purely because I suppose it's that thing where, I don't know, if you're a film fan, you watch a movie you like and you find out the director's influenced by another director, so you start watching his film and you go all the way back.
Yeah.
And I've never done that really because I'm not a massive film buff or anything, but with music, I was really into the White Stripes when they first came out.
Yeah.
When I first listened to them, was around 2001-ish. When I was at university, and he did, and the White Stripes on their record Distill did a song called Death Letter, which is a cover of a Son House song.
Yes.
That's that got me into things like Son House and Robert Johnson and all those type of artists. And I've picked up a load of records over the years since they've been reissued, like Sounds of the South and stuff by people like Sid Hemphill and that kind of stuff. And early blues music is a real passion of mine. And I read a book not so long ago called The Man Who Recorded the World about Alan Lomax, who discovered all these blues musicians and folk musicians working in the field in the sort of 30s and 40s in the US. And so I really wanted to get a song that represented that part of music that I really like. So I've gone for Son House's version, which I think was put out in about, this version was put out in about mid-60s, and it's Death Letter Blues.
Letter this morning, I rang her in. Say, hurry, hurry, the gal you Jersey. I got a letter this morning. I said, now, how do you ring it ring? Yeah, they said, hurry, hurry, because the gal you I grabbed up my suitcase, took her down the road. When I got down, she had laying on the cooling board. I grabbed up my suitcase, I said I took her down the road.
Yeah, did the same thing as you, actually. I got into that particular song through the White Stripes and went back to him through that.
Well, Jack White's been great for that. He's really a man of many faults, I'm sure most people would say, but he's pretty good at sort of wearing his influences on his sleeve to the point where he's quite in awe of them, and he's quite sort of deferential to them, and he lets people, makes it clear that that's the sort of stuff he likes and that's where it comes from. And so that's really helpful for a listener, right? Because then you can go back and find the stuff that you liked, that you like, that's relevant to the stuff that you like now.
Absolutely. So we talked about your love of music and football, but what about your, I don't know if you would count this as your first love, but Pompey, Portsmouth, your team.
Yeah.
I often think with Portsmouth in particular, maybe because I think about them with your show in mind, but it's almost like one of those questions that you get asked where it said, if we could give you the FA Cup, but you're going to have to suffer at least 10 years of absolute turmoil. So they won the FA Cup in 2008, and then the club basically imploded not that long afterwards.
Yeah.
Do you think you would have taken it if you would have offered it in the early 2000s?
It's a really difficult question to answer because from a pure football fan point of view, of course, I enjoyed that FA Cup win immensely, and it's something that it's got great memories for me. I mean, it being just over 10 years ago, and I had great experiences around it, and it's not something I would change. But however, I do also understand that the football club I support came very close to being non-existent. And there were a lot of local businesses and a lot of things that happened around that where they set up a deal with the revenue and with their creditors and stuff that meant that a lot of people lost out, including some charities. So my contempt is really for the people who made those decisions in the first place. But from a pure footballing point of view, if we just take it on the pitch, would I take an FA Cup win to then end up in League Two a few years later? I think I probably would.
Yeah.
But I don't obviously advocate or support or condone any of the stuff that went on off the pitch because it left a lot of people out of pocket and was frankly embarrassing. So it's hard to separate those things, I think. And these days, football fans are required to have an opinion or have a sort of moral standpoint on the owner of their club and how it's run. And when I was young, that was never the case. You never really got involved. You just watched the team and liked the players. Now, I'm not saying one is right and one is wrong and that it's, you know, we're all going to hell in a handcuff, but I'm just saying it's a difficult thing when you're put in that position as a fan because you still want to continue to support the team, but at the same time, you can have an issue with the way that it's run. And I feel like I'm a caught between the two stools a bit there, really.
I can imagine that. And you're so right that people feel like they need to have an opinion on that side of it when you know after all football is a leisure pursuit for most people and you know it's an outlet so you don't necessarily need that. What about just on the pitch, what are your happiest memories of watching Pompey over the years?
Well of course the FA Cup final win, but for me it's football is a leisure pursuit and it is a pastime and a form of entertainment. And I think when I think about the best times watching Portsmouth, it doesn't necessarily tally up with them being the best team. I mean, it's when, you know, I was at sixth form college or whatever and living down there still, and we used to go to every home game as a bunch of friends, and they would largely be terrible, but you used to enjoy it anyway. And
do you know the bloke with the cowbell?
I don't know him, no. I've obviously...
The other celebrity Portsmouth fan.
See, that's got to stop. People can't say that. One, I'm not a celebrity. And two, I don't want to be in that category. But I have obviously rubbed shoulders with him inadvertently at the occasional game because that's just unfortunate how it is. But I don't equate enjoyment of watching my team with them being brilliant. Obviously, I'd like to see them win. But to me, it's about the experience and the camaraderie. And now I've actually really enjoyed taking my wife to Pompey games.
Yeah.
She'd never been before because why would she? And it's a nice time for us. She enjoys watching football games, so it's nice for us to spend some time together and go and do that. So in a way, it's almost like a family member that's always there. You can go and visit and all that kind of stuff. But because I'm up in London now, I don't get to see them as much as I used to. But I suppose it's almost like an abstract question to answer because it's just part of it, isn't it? I mean, you're a Sheffield Wednesday fan. You would have great experiences of supporting Sheffield Wednesday. Now, I'm sure some of them would be about them being successful like when they won the League Cup and all that kind of stuff. But some of them would just be great experiences with your friends, right?
Yeah, last 20 years, not so much the on-the-pitch action, but what I remember. Yeah, definitely. Mm. It's been some incredible times. Mm. So tell us about your next song then, Luke.
The next song is... by a band called The Beta Band, who are, for me, one of the best British bands ever. They're just so innovative, so interesting, so clever, but also never losing sight of that pop sensibility either. Mm. I think a lot of bands who get too clever try and sort of stay away from melody and think, oh, it's too easy or it's too sort of basic to be poppy and to be fun and to be catchy. And I think The Beta Band achieve a balance of being able to be really... actually quite deep and quite affecting and it's heavy duty songwriting in my opinion.
Yeah.
But at the same time it's also really accessible and really good and if we're doing this desert island thing or desert isolation as you have to call it.
Yeah, you're isolated in the desert.
Desert isolation, okay. Yeah. Well, I'll be dead in 10 minutes because I'll get sunburnt very quickly. But presuming I could find some sort of shelter.
Mm.
I chose this song. It's Dr. Baker, but it's the Live at the Shepherd's Bush Empire version, purely because they completely reinvent the song and it gives it a really fresh flavour. And I also thought to myself, if I'm going to be isolated somewhere, I'd quite like to hear a crowd and some voices and some real actual instinctive impromptu like energy. So that's why I chose this version. And this is The Beta Band with Dr. Baker live at Shepherd's Bush Empire.
Dr. Baker phoned me in the morning, left a note, he's still yawning. Dr. Baker phoned me in the morning, they left a note, she could make it. How did she ever take a listen outside his head? Dr. Baker phoned me in the morning, he couldn't understand, he was a busy man. Tried to reach him again, to plead with him. Please come, please come, please come. Please come, please come, please come. You will see me.
That was the Beta Band live at Shepherd's Bush Empire. And I was just thinking there, that album, the three EPs that was obviously brought together, on which Dr. Bacon, Dry the Rain, which is one of my favourites, probably number nine in the list if I was doing this. It feels a bit underrated when you look back at musical history.
It's really interesting going, if you look back at some interviews back in the 90s of really big bands like Oasis and Radiohead and one or two others. There's instances where they say, oh, our next record, we want to make a Beta Band record. We want to make a record like the Beta Band. They're almost like your favourite band's favourite band.
Yeah.
They never really crossed over and became massively commercially successful. And I only really got into them properly probably about 10 years ago.
Mm.
And I think that they'd probably split up by then. So it was a long time after their peak period. There's a lot of reasons for that, I think. And I wouldn't want to speak on behalf of them, obviously, but they had issues with mental health and with... lots of other sort of situations that went on around the group, and so in a way it feels like it's a group of music put together that exists in one particular time.
Yeah,
and, I mean, I'd love them to reform, so I'd go see him. But
well, Steve Mason himself, the lead singer,
Steve Mason live,
and he's very innovative now with some hip hop crossover. Yeah. So, you know, so he's
when
still
I saw him live,
got
though,
lots
Alex.
Of ideas.
Oh, definitely. When I saw him live, he actually played a few Beta Band songs.
Yeah.
So he's obviously in, you know, he obviously still likes it and everything. And I really enjoyed that solo record he put out called Boys Outside.
Yes.
Which is great. I just think they're a fantastically innovative band and one of the most underrated British bands ever, in my opinion. And I just never get bored of listening to them. I find them, they have a huge amount of different influences from different types of music. I mean, a lot of the Beta Band stuff, it is quite hip hop influenced as well. It's quite dubby in places. It's got a lot of different sort of strings to its bow. So, and that's not necessarily my favourite of their song. I just thought it was an interesting version of a song that I really like.
Definitely. But he is responsible for one of the worst band names ever, which was King Biscuit Time.
Yeah, I never really got into them.
Yeah, I don't know why he called them that. No. They had some decent songs.
Did they? Okay, I've never really heard them. But yeah.
Just a little note then. You mentioned your wife there, Mimi. You guys are known for something. Well, you particularly. Hashtag travel. You have a good relationship with your listeners.
Well, that's her fault.
Is that down to her influence?
Yes. She's from the US, so we do a bit of travelling back and forward. And at that point, we weren't living together. She was living in the US and I was living here.
Mm.
And I used to get bored of Instagram or whatever, I'd take photos and she was like, oh yeah, I'll upload them for you. And she would always put hashtag travel in there. So then I started putting hashtag travel in there because I guess it means that people will see your photos.
Sure.
I don't really know why I did it because I don't really use hashtags now unless I'm trying to be funny.
Yeah.
And then the Football Ramble listeners in all their infinite wisdom thought it was funny.
Mm-hmm.
And now I can't really do anything online without someone replying with hashtag travel.
Mm-hmm.
If I go, we do a live show, I get people literally saying it to me, which
I'm
the only person must have people actually saying hashtags to me. So it's backfired.
Yeah.
It's mostly her fault, but I'll take it on the chin, I suppose.
Just tell us about those live shows then, because as a sort of specky white football fan, I didn't feel in the minority at the few live shows that I've been to the Football Ramble. How are those experiences for you? I mean, you filled up some incredible venues and you must have had great
time. They're amazing, yeah. It's a great privilege and it's enjoyable and it's a real buzz, like an instant buzz that you don't get with a podcast. So, of course, yeah, it's great. And they are very male affairs, as I suppose you'd expect. But, of course, we don't plan it that way. We want it to be as inclusive and as interesting for as many people as possible. So I would say that it's a really nice atmosphere, I think, and hopefully you'd agree. And if anyone is not male and wants to come, you're also very welcome. But it's great. It's fantastic. And do you know what? Doc Brown, who is a comedian and actor, Ben Baddy Smith, he's a good friend. He had the idea and basically produced the first live tour we did. We went to, did one in London, or did a couple in London, I think, actually, and did something in Edinburgh, Manchester, and one or two others. And then it sort of went from there, and now we produce them ourselves. And we're hoping to announce some more shows, actually, for some big shows, hopefully next year. So it's a great aspect of the job, and we really enjoy doing it, all of us, I think. And it's great because you know, we always try and keep it like inclusive. So we'll always go to the bar after. We'll always make it interactive. We'll always get people out of the audience. We're trying to take it beyond just four blokes sat behind a table talking about football. Because I think really, that ain't, for me, that's not good enough. If you want to charge people 20 quid to come see you, whatever we charge,
yeah,
it's got to be more than that. You can't just do that. I don't agree with other podcasts doing it, and so we don't want to do it ourselves. So we've tried to turn it into at least the start or the makings of a proper theatre show with no experience or skills. So hopefully we're feeling our way through it, and there's more to come. So there's something to look out for. But to answer your question in short, it's a great thing.
No, it's to your credit. They're great shows. And so what about your next song then?
I'm going for another Scottish band,
one
of my favourite bands ever. And when I was putting this list together, obviously band artists have to miss out. So I've tried to, as I said earlier, tried to be representative of different types of music I like. This is one of my favourite bands. I'm going to see them again in November. I've seen them before. Another really underrated band from that 90s era, and it's Teenage Fan Club, and the song is December.
That was Teenage Fan Club. A great song, that one, Luke. What was it particularly that made you pick that one?
It was difficult to pick a song. It's just impossible. And I couldn't pick a single one. I could have picked anything from, this is like Bandwagon-esque, obviously, the one of their early records. And about four of those I could have picked. I could have picked Baby Lee, which is a later song, which my wife and I had at our wedding. I could have picked anything from Grand Prix, which is probably my favourite of their records. But ultimately, you've only got one song. So I literally just thought, right, which song do I want to hear right now in this moment? And I picked that one because it's catchy and I love it. And so that was it. It doesn't say, it's not my favourite of their songs necessarily, but when it comes to music, I'm someone who goes through phases. Sometimes I'll think, oh, do you know what? You know, the Beat Band are the best band ever. And I'll just listen to them for a week solid. And then sometimes I'll not want to listen to them for a couple of months.
Yeah.
I find it very hard. So this is eight songs of how I feel now.
Yeah.
If we did it in a couple of weeks, it'd be different. So there's no real method behind that madness. I just love Teenage Fan Club and I want them to be represented in this.
So you're not the OCD type that is always making lists of that kind of thing?
Well, I've got a group of friends, five or six of us are all music fans, and we try and stay together and see each other as much as possible, because when you're a guy in his 30s and you get married and people start having families, I think as a man particularly, you can become quite isolated. So we've made a real conscious effort to stay in touch, and we go to quite a lot of shows. And we've got a WhatsApp group and some other stuff going on. And they're really dear friends to me. And it's actually a really important part of my life because, as you know, you've got a couple of kids yourself. You can go through ages not seeing people. You've really got to make an effort.
Yeah.
And so we do sometimes do things to keep ourselves in contact. So we'll make up lists of our favourite artists. We did like a Eurovision type thing where we had like a short list of 20 artists. And we had to give them all points individually. And then we unveiled it and did like a list that way. So sometimes, but I don't sit there writing lists myself. No, I'm too busy.
Can you remember who came out on top?
I think it was the Velvet Underground, but I didn't have them as my number one.
Okay.
I had the Rolling Stones as my number one, who aren't on this list.
Because I noticed on your Luke and Pete show, which we'll go on to, but you were talking today about the heritage, or the show that's gone out today. You were talking about the heritage of Mick Jagger and his kids,
yes,
his great-grandkids. So they're a big band for you.
I like the Rolling Stones, and I like what they, not necessarily like what they represent now, but I think if I could transport myself back to any era, I'd probably go back and hopefully sit in on the XL on Main Street recording sessions. That may be my choice. I love that record. I think they're an amazing band. And Mick Jagger has a son who is younger than his great-granddaughter, which is an amazing stat, amazing bit of trivia. And that's what we're talking about on that show. But yeah, I love the Stones. They haven't made it into this list, but if I had my way, we'd have about 500 songs on there. So we have to keep it light.
So I mentioned Luke and Pete there, and you've got various podcasts that you're working on under the Radio Stakhanov. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yes, it's Radio Stakhanov is a network of podcasts where we decided that we were quite not hemmed in or sort of restricted, because that sounds negative, and we're obviously very grateful to be doing the Football Ramble and on the continent, but we were only really making football shows. The Luke and Pete show came out summer before last because we had no football. And then we just thought, hang on a minute, let's build it into a network. We've got loads of ideas. And so myself, Pete and John, who's a guy who runs the Ramble with us, decided to branch out and do a network of podcasts.
Yeah.
Hence, we have a show called Berkhamsted Revisited, which I have helped to create and produce, about a girl reading back through her teenage diaries. And then we have...
It's very good.
I really like it. I think it's great. And we have... I would say that, wouldn't I? And we have... Pete does a show called Wrestle Me with Mark Haynes, where they go back watching every WrestleMania. It's just a way to branch out, to have... If you've got an idea, it will be a shame if we think it's a good idea, or there's some good people who want to do it, where you think, oh, we can't do that because it's not a football show, or you know, there's reason to not do it. Now, you can think of 1,000 reasons not to do anything, so we just thought we'd branch out and do it that way.
And, you know, I think podcasting as a medium shows the strength of ideas that people have. I mean, your friend of mine, a friend of the show, Tom Wally, does a cycling podcast with playing old cycling games in his shed in the back garden.
Tom's very good, and I have repeatedly asked him to come and do some stuff with us, but you can't pin him down for more than 5 minutes, so it's impossible.
I mean, all you need to get Tom is a bike. That's how you get him in the...
He also lives in the arse end of nowhere. So
yes, he does. He does. Yeah. So what's your next song?
My next song is... I mentioned David Bowie earlier. I was introduced to him by my dear old mum, who is a David Bowie devotee. And it was difficult to pick a song because obviously it's David Bowie and he's got so many. He's genuinely one of my favourite artists. I can always find something of his to listen to that I like in whatever mood I'm in. And I went for the Diamond Dogs era because I sort of... Maybe it's because I'm feeling quite apocalyptic because of everything that's happening in the world at the moment. But obviously it's based on Orwell's 1984 and it's quite dystopian in its feel. And Sweet Thing is my favourite song on the record. It goes into a song called Candidate and then goes back into Sweet Thing and then it goes straight into Rebel Rebel. But I thought it would be greedy to have 4 songs in one and you wouldn't let me have it. So I've gone for Sweet Thing because it's my favourite standalone song on the record. So here it is.
That was the glorious David Bowie. I'm glad you didn't try and sneak a montage under the net there.
Well, it would have been good. I mean, really, that's an album. It's a bit of a weird pick, I suppose, on one level, because that's a record you've got to listen to from start to finish. It's like a whole work, you know.
Yeah.
But that sounds pretentious, so I just picked a song out of that. I could have picked one of 50, as I'm sure people listening will empathise with, because I'm sure they are fans as well. He's the only sort of famous person I've ever been really upset about when he died.
Yeah.
I'm quite detached. I don't really feel like I feel grief or emotion about people I don't know. But Bowie, it was awful. It's really... I can't really explain why. Possibly because I spent formative years listening to it with my mother or something like that.
Yeah.
It was really, really difficult.
No, I completely agree. And, you know, someone... I work at a newspaper at the Evening Standard, and we're pretty neutral when it comes to a lot of these things. You know, it's work after all. Yeah. When someone dies, you know, it's how quickly can we turn around the front page? But
yeah,
you know, I still remember the ripple that went through the newsroom at, you know, 6:30 a.m. in the morning, which was when it was announced. And it's rare that you see so many people from different generations affected by it.
Yeah, he's an absolute national treasure. Legend. If someone said to me it's the best British artist of all time in any genre, I wouldn't be upset about that.
Mm.
But I am upset that he's dead.
And your next pick is another giant of music, isn't it?
See, this was a bit of a trick because I couldn't fit all the ones I wanted in. So I've got Jimi Hendrix doing a Bob Dylan song.
Yeah,
so I get two birds with one stone.
Very clever.
If you put a playlist together on Spotify like people do these days and you don't really listen to albums from start to finish, if you stick Jimi Hendrix doing Bob Dylan's Lock Around the Stone live at Monterey in 68, maybe, it sounds about three levels above any other song that comes before it or any song that comes after it. It's amazing how good it sounds, even now. And I love Bob Dylan, obviously, and I love Jimi Hendrix. And I thought, I'm not spending two songs out of eight on those two. So I amalgamated them. But genuinely, this is one of my favourite live records ever. The whole album's brilliant. There's about three or four live albums that would be my favourites. And this is definitely in there. But it's Jimi Hendrix doing Like a Rolling Stone by Bob Dylan live at Monterey Pop Festival.
This one now, you got no secrets to conceal.
Rabonas ve Ritims, dünyadan futbol ve müzik hikayeleri.
Luke, can you give us a bit of a prelude to any more future projects that you've got working on?
Well, I told you we might have some live stuff in the pipeline for the Ramble. We're anticipating a big season, football season for the Football Ramble this year, hopefully.
Mm.
We had a lot of fun at the World Cup, and so we want to keep up that momentum. I don't have anything concrete in the pipeline in terms of new shows because I'm too busy as it is. We need to hire some more people first.
Where do you see, just talking about the Ramble, I mean, what do you see your role as? Do you feel like each of the four of you as we sit around your mics have a distinct role in the show?
What do you think? You listen to it.
Well,
I would obviously say, yes, I've got the best role. What do you tell me?
No, but I think you know, you were talking about making it serious sometimes. I do think that you often bring the analysis to the show, you know, when the banter is at a certain level. It feels like you've made a concrete effort to sort of do that and to drill down into certain topics.
Yeah. Is that the purpose? It's probably because I take myself the most seriously aspect.
Yeah.
But we try and make it an entertainment show about football, as I said. So if you want to do that, it's got to be entertaining and it's got to be about football.
Yeah.
You have to have a foot in each camp.
Mm.
And I think if you go too far off the beaten track, it's not going to be a great show. It's going to be self-indulgent. It's going to be, listen to how funny we are.
Yeah.
And if you go too serious, it's going to sound like every other football show, which I personally find a lot of them quite boring. So,
and since you started, there are far, far more of them than there was.
Yeah, of course, yeah. And so you want to have a foot in each camp.
Mm.
So, and I do a bit of radio and a bit of TV punditing about football in a semi-serious way at least. So, I don't know, maybe I feel like... It's not that I feel like I'm the best at it. It's just that I feel like I do want to talk about football. I do like football. So if it's something I've caught my eye or something I've enjoyed watching or something I've noticed, I'll tend to bring it to the table. And the guys are all football fans as well. So it's not a departure. It's just that I probably... like the sound of my own voice more than all the others I expect.
But is it tricky when if you're on say Talk Sport or World Football Phone In or on TV and you know, someone like a Craig Brown that you've had fun with on the show appears, you know, or you're talking about a subject that's been funny on the show and you've got to find a different tone of voice to
podcasting. I wouldn't say it's difficult. It does flash across my mind. And sometimes I'll say, so I do a show on Friday nights called The Season Ticket with Danny Kelly and Laura Woods.
Yes.
And Danny's a legend of broadcasting. And he was doing the stuff I'm doing years before, you know, I was even thinking about it. So, you know. He knows all that stuff.
You've stolen this material.
I basically have, yeah. I've taken it on. Some people would say I've taken it on another level, but the level is just lower. So it's not though all the other gigs I do, I have to be deadly serious. I think that stuff's overrated and overplayed. You can have fun. I think you can have as much fun as you want doing it within the time limit you're given.
Mm.
I think it's a bit of a myth that you can't have a bit of fun with stuff. I mean, that TalkSport show, we have fun the whole 3 hours, really. There's nothing really that serious in it.
No.
It's not a hugely difference in tone. There's no difference in tone from the ramble, really.
Mm.
But I think that the type of people who are hired on the radio and TV more often than not about football are ex-pros who are quite serious. I mean,
yeah.
And so they are either brilliant at analysis or they're not, but not many of them are particularly irreverent or fun. And the ones who are and who are good at it stand out. Someone like Ian Wright, for example.
Yeah.
He's great. He doesn't take himself too serious. I've worked with him a number of times. He's fantastic. Knows his stuff.
Mm.
But he's also like a really entertaining guy, I think.
Yeah.
So that people like that are out there. It's just the way that people are booked and the way shows go aren't necessarily going down that route. But some of the stuff I do is quite serious. And, and so you can't really do it.
So one word in part of that then, the Mostradamus. And your penalty algorithm, the idea that you could see into the future. How far do you want to push that?
As far as I can. As far as I can. Yeah.
Do you want to make some calls? Next World Cup winner, for example?
Next World Cup winner at this point. So we're recording for the record in September 2018.
Mm.
I should have a copy of today's paper with me, shouldn't I? Yeah. Just to prove it.
Yeah.
The next World Cup winner. There's going to be 48 teams now. I'm not necessarily.
No.
But it's going to be in Qatar.
Yeah.
And it's going to be in the winter. I think the next winner of the World Cup is going to be Brazil.
Okay, big shout. Next £200 million player?
That's a good question. I think the next £200 million player could well be Mbappe again.
Yeah, to transfer yet again.
Yeah.
To one of the major leagues.
Sheffield Wednesday.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Yeah.
You like that, wouldn't you?
We need a music one then. I don't know. Next rock and roll star to cop it.
I can't say that.
No.
That's unfair. I'm not going down that road.
Too dark. Okay. The next one to hit number one for a huge selling album.
The next big artist. I'm not really that into it. I'm not really that clued up on it. I wouldn't even better give you an answer.
Mostradamus doesn't extend to music.
No,
this
I never claimed he did.
What's your? Is this your final track for
yes,
today?
Yes, it is. This final track is a song. Again, the reason I chose this song is it's the first song by this band I heard, and it just seemed like quite an easy way of picking one because I could have picked loads.
Mm.
It's by a band called Japandroids, who are for me the best band of the 21st century. They're a band for the first time I think since Nirvana where I thought, whoa, this band actually mean it. And I've seen them live a number of times. Always really enjoyed their stuff. It's just two of them, but they make a hell of a racket. Again, another example. And if there's one theme that goes through the music I've chosen, it's that melody is an amazing thing, and it shouldn't be arch, or music shouldn't be complicated for complicated sake.
Mm.
And Japan was very much fit into that. The drummer and the singer and the guitarist, or a guitarist-singer, so there's two of them in total.
Mm.
In fact, they both sing, to be fair, so there's two of them doing a whole lot of stuff at the same time. It sounds brilliant. And this is Young Hearts Spark Pop.
We'll be right back.
That was the Japan Droids. Luke, this has been fantastic listening to your picks. If I absolutely twisted your arm, could you pick one to sit with under the desert, under the tree, I guess, to protect your fair skin?
Yeah, I think.
And listen to.
I'd have to go with Jimi Hendrix and Like a Rolling Stone, but.
So you've still got two.
Two artists. I do find that Japan Droids song really affecting even now. I mean, I think I probably first heard it almost 10 years ago, but I still find it really deeply affecting now. Just the imagery it conjures up and the emotion attached to it. Because that's what we do, don't we? We attach emotions to songs, and that's why they're so deep for us. But for music fans, I suppose. But I would have to go with Jimmy and Like a Rolling Stone, purely because I don't think it can be bettered in terms of a song or in a performance of a song. So I'll choose that.
That's great. It's been an absolute pleasure speaking to you. And as a fan of podcasting in general, I think some of the work that you're doing is great. And it's really fantastic to see.
Imagine you couldn't hear it. It wouldn't do very well.
Yeah. Well, you know, you've still got your videos, haven't you? You know?
Yeah, the less said about that, the better. Face for radio, mate. That's me.
Luke, thank you very much.
That was a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
We'll